You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
25 minutes before noon, Karabakholeng is hanging out with us, and Kate Sidley is on the line, and Andrea van Wyk is here in the studio. And we're going to be talking about, I don't know, people call it holiday reads. The concept doesn't make much sense to me, but it does to my friends that I'm hanging out with. Guys, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Always good to be here.
Although judging by some of the titles in front of Andrea, I think she's got a similar view on this as me. I just read what I want, whether it's holiday or not. Kate, hello. You're somewhere in the Eastern Cape. Where are you?
I am in a place called Cannon Rocks.
Oh, lovely. I know Cannon Rocks.
Yeah. Oh, do you? Oh, well, you're a Grahamstown guy.
Yes.
Good, yeah.
Oh, that is so awesome.
It's very awesome. I hope my brain's a bit on holiday, so I hope I can keep up with your other guests.
Well, that's a beautiful segue into an obvious question. What kind of reads are consistent with a brain that is on holiday?
Well, I'm like you. I basically read whatever I would normally read, and I think it's a nice opportunity to read some of the books that I've missed during the year. And what I'm reading now is Mandla Langer and Nelson Mandela's book, Dare Not Linger, The Presidential Years.
Okay, that's a doorstopper for the holidays, huh?
Well, it is, but it's quite readable.
Is it?
Okay. And I have got it as well. Yeah.
And how's it going, Kate? How far into it are you?
So I'm sort of fairly early on in the process, and for people who don't know, it's Nelson Mandela's sort of second memoir, and it takes over where Long Walk to Freedom left off, which I've also recently reread and really loved it again after reading it, obviously, many years ago. So what's happened with this book is that Mandla Langer, who, as you all know, is a very well-regarded local writer and award-winning novelist and so on. So he's taken what Nelson Mandela had written himself, which is about 70,000 words, apparently, of his own drafts, original drafts, which he was going to put into the second part of his memoir. And so Mandla's taken that. Obviously, Mandela didn't finish it. And he's completed the book. So parts of it are the original bits from Mandela, and parts of it are Mandla's own way of drawing the story together, framing it historically. And it's beautiful. It's really insightful and rich and quite lovely to read. And I think it's a very difficult job to do as a writer.
Absolutely.
And particularly, you know, taking on the responsibility of telling Nelson Mandela's personal story. Although he doesn't do it in the first person. Of course, Long Walk to Freedom is written in the first person all the way through. And this is kind of a mixture. So you can tell which is Mandela's voice and which is Mandela's voice. I think it's a good read.
And a second recommendation, or is that the only one that you've taken with you?
No, I have another one, which I've already read, actually, which is Lincoln in the Bardo, which is a Booker Prize winner for this year. And it's a very strange book. It's unusual. It has ghosts in it, which is normally a complete deal killer for me. I don't want to see spirits and, you know, I like a nice, you know, realistic story.
Yes. But
actually, I did read it. It's such a fresh and experimental novel. I mean, he's done really interesting things with form. It starts off from a real-life spark, which was the tale of the death of Abraham Lincoln's son. Very beloved 11-year-old son who died, I think, they think probably from typhoid. And Lincoln was so devastated that he went to the crypt where his son had been interred, and he to mourn the child, and he actually sort of picked up the corpse and, you know, tried to communicate with this boy. And so in this book, Willie doesn't go into the afterlife. He goes into the Bardo, which is a kind of a limbo. And it's populated by these spirits, these sort of dead folks who haven't willingly gone into, you know, into the afterlife where they should be, and they function as kind of characters and narrators in the story. And it sounds kind of tricksy, but it's really interesting because they deal with all sorts of issues of American society at the time, and they tell their own little stories. Like, and they're not important people; they're kind of you know, they're regular folks, and they have the same kind of musings on life and death. It's funny. And it's just touching as well in the way that we cling to life, our own and others, you know, and it's such a human, such a human impulse. And I would recommend it. I liked it a lot. I know not everyone does, but I mean, enough people do win the Booker.
Sure.
And the other thing about it, which is nice, is that there's an audio book for people who are traveling.
Okay.
And they've got really fantastic, they've got David Sedaris and Ben Stiller and all kinds of people playing this kind of motley chorus multitude of voices. So I think it's a nice one. I haven't heard the audiobook, but I think it's quite an interesting option if you like that kind of thing.
Kate, enjoy Canon Rocks and thanks for dropping in.
Thank you. Nice to chat to you. I'll listen to what everyone else is recommending.
Cheers. And we'll see you in the new year. Always wonderful having you on the show. It is 20 minutes before noon.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, you guys have brought libraries here, hey? Nerds!
Yeah. I'm totally happy with being called a nerd.
No, me too. I mean it as a compliment.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, I don't mean it in the Jacob Zuma, clever black kind of derogatory way. Reading is absolutely cool. Let's talk about what you've got. I'm going to shut up.
Okay, well, Karabo, sorry, I'll just jump in there.
By the way, yes, you both look stunning. And so summery.
Yeah,
this is like you. Coordination going there.
I know, we had a memo that...
Subliminal memo.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to say that Lincoln and the Barter, having read it as well, I can affirm what Kate said. It is really a marvelous book. I've decided that I'm dumping nonfiction. I've got such a political hangover, and we've had these incredible but very hard-hitting books, Jacques Poe, Reedy Clubby, all those books, and I just felt that, you know, I'm drained. I can't anymore. I'm reading fiction the rest of the year, and I'm going to dip into some things that also have been on my list for, you know, 2 or 3
Fair
years.
Enough.
The book that I started off with, this one I actually finished this morning, Frederick Bachman's A Man Called Ove. It was actually published in 2014 already. Everybody's been raving about it for years, and I finally got around to it, and I can see why everybody loved it so much. It's a Swedish read. It is about a grumpy 59-year-old man called Ove. Everyone around him is a moron, according to him. He's the kind of guy who likes things done right. He's a stickler for the rules. If there's a sign saying no parking over there, you'd better not park there. If there's a sign saying you can't park there for more than 24 hours, he will go and check that you've not been
he
there
sounds
for
sounds like the lead SM hero of the month.
Anyway, so it begins with this hilarious scene in which he's trying to buy an iPad or an OPad, as he calls it, and he just has the most brilliant arguments with the shop assistant about how they're trying to do him in, because why does the OPad not come with a keyboard? And they're trying to explain that actually it has a keyboard already in any case. So he's the kind of man who points fingers at people he doesn't like the look of, as if they were burglars, and he's forefinger a policeman's torch, I'm quoting here. So he's desperately also, he's a very depressed man. He's desperately trying to die, but failing at suicide every time he tries, because every time he's just about to do it, some fool in his neighborhood will come and knock on his door and be like, I need your help with something. And he doesn't want to. He's grumpy. But then he thinks, my late wife, you know, by the time I get to the afterlife, she's going to, you know, wag her finger at me and berate me for not helping these people. So let me just go and help this person, and then I can kill myself afterwards. But it's just this
that sounds hilarious.
Beautiful exploration of this guy. And you can't actually help but grow fond of him. It's one of the most beautiful lines I've ever read, actually, is when the author describes his relationship with his wife. And it says, people said Ove saw the world in black and white, but she was color, all the color he had. And it just, this book is quirky, it's moving, it's original. I mean, I chuckled out loud, and this morning as I reached the end, I was desperately fighting to be an objective reviewer and distance myself, and I failed miserably. Aww. And the tears just flowed.
This sounds stunning.
It is stunning.
Beautiful.
So perfect holiday.
And by the end of it, is she still waiting for Ove? Don't tell us.
No. I'm like, but you have to read this. This is really, it's everything. It's perfect. It's not difficult to read, but it just grabs
cool,
you.
Cool beans. Grabo?
Oh, yo. I don't know which one to begin with, but do you recognize this guy?
Nah.
Isn't he Ronald McDonald?
And I want you to be jealous.
Oh,
look
at you. Okay. A billionaire signature.
Yes. So, talked about fellow in the country right now, Cyril Ramaphosa. And I've had this book for 10 years. It first came out in 2007. And it is his authorized biography written by Anthony Butler. And I'm starting this because, you know, we're looking back. This is who he is.
We have to come
now
to terms with him.
Exactly. And it's very interesting what Professor Kader Asmal said about Cyril Ramaphosa, that he's been one of the most significant figures in South African political life over the past three decades. Well, now it's four. Yet his character and political beliefs have remained largely unknown, which is different now, right? Anthony Butler's long-awaited, that's back then, biography promises for the first time to shed light on the life and thought of this most enigmatic and popular national leader. So I'm reading it thinking, you know, it's a retrospective thing. Mm. And to see, I'm making a comparison between then and now. Mm. It is an enjoyable read because you get a history of this man from the beginning and how, you know, how his political life began and how he worked in the mining workers movement. So
is it very readable?
Yes, it is.
I mean, the author is brilliant. I love his mind. He's an excellent political scientist. Sometimes his columns in Business Day can be very turgid stylistically.
No, with this
I hope
one,
he's not listening.
No, with this one, it's definitely something that's easy to get into. And I worked for the publisher back then. It was just before my media career. That's how I managed to get a signed copy. But also, Cyril Ramaphosa was very, very involved. And the way that this happens is that there's lots of conversations with people who have been a part of his both personal and his political life. Okay. So there are a lot of conversations in that. So it makes it an entertaining read. Yeah.
Okay, 14 minutes before noon. Let's take a break, both because we need to take one. And I need a biology break, as the Americans call it. If I'm not back, you two can take over the show.
Eusebius MacIsaac.
You are listening to the Literature Corner. It is Thursday afternoon and we are discussing festive reads. My name is Karabo Kholeng and your host is Eusebius MacIsaac.
Oh, give that woman a show. Oh, wait, she's already on. She's already on the station. Love them both. Okay, I've got nothing to say, guys. I mean, that book looks huge.
It is huge, but it's because...
Nerd!
But it's because it's Paul Auster's magnum opus, 4321. It's to literature what Richard Linklater's Boyhood was to film. It's an ode to a boy growing up, a coming-of-age story that encompasses self-discovery, heartbreak, and the realm of endless possibilities that lies before any child. So this is the story of Archie Ferguson, but not just one Archie Ferguson, four Archie Fergusons, beginning with Archie's birth. So each Archibald Ferguson takes four different and independent paths. Each live parallel lives with friendships, loves, tough familial relationships, difficult career paths, and sometimes their stories overlap and sometimes their paths diverge. But it doesn't matter. I mean, you wonder now, which is the real one? Is this a story about, you know, people imagining what it would have been like if you'd make different choices. Mm. But it doesn't really matter. It's basically about how each choice you make is that tiny little pebble in the pond that ripples outwards. How different would your life be if you'd made one different decision at one point in your life? Would you somehow end up in the same place, somewhere slightly different, or somewhere wholly different? So also, I mean, the four Archie stories as they progress through the novel, so he'll do like four chapters. So from birth till the age of four, all four stories, one after the other, and then the next section and the next section. So it doesn't end up hanging in mid-air at the end. He marvelously, beautifully ties them all together in a very, very clever way. I mean, I know it looks meaty. It is a big book. I mean, how many pages is this? Nearly 900. But
oh, look at you.
I mean, while it's meaty, I wouldn't call it difficult.
Okay, no, fair enough.
It is mesmerizing.
Permission to speak from the Peanut Gallery?
Yes.
One of my favorite old debates in literature, and the three of us can have it next year, is, you know, I think we do all... when we stereotype fiction, we do it a disservice. I'm listening to your description of what this book is about in terms of the themes. I don't know if you agree with me, Karabo. And I think about what you said about the first book. We can toss a coin and have a lekker debate around the question, what depicts the human condition more intelligently, the best works of fiction or works of nonfiction? Because you say to me that you want to escape all the heavy nonfiction books, but you are doing some serious exploration of the human psyche with both of those books.
But
fiction.
Look,
in a good way.
Fiction,
no,
but
way.
You know what? I mean,
it's an ode to fiction.
No, absolutely. But if you've read the research, right? if you read nonfiction, you're stretching your imagination. You're sure. being informed. Yeah. And you could be entertained, but you're not stretching your imagination. If you want to learn empathy, you read fiction.
100%.
And if you want to teach children empathy, you get them to read fiction. And that's why I prefer fiction.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay, over to you. What's the next book you're going to squeeze in for us?
My second book is fiction, inspired by Sue Townsend's the Adrian Mole series. But this one is The Secret Diary of Hendrik Groen, 83 and a quarter years old. So it's also something that's an ode to the twilight years, similar to A Man Called Ove. But Hendrik Groen, he is an older man. He's an elder man who lives in an elderly home. And it's his diary about what life is like, how he looks at the world, and his friends. Now, remember that his friends come and go quite rapidly because they pass on. But it is hilarious. One of his friends goes into hospital and he has to look after his dog, but his friend is in assisted care, so he's got his own house. And how he starts to plan outings and, the nasty nurse who runs the place. So it is absolutely hilarious. And again, it brings empathy. And here you're reading a story about somebody who's in the twilight years. And I feel that we don't often think about the lives of people who are in their twilight years. And this is a space that brings empathy and the kind of humor that can be present in that time of life, because we're all heading there if we're going to be given our 3, 4, and 10, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What else do you have for us? We've still got another couple of minutes.
A minute is
a long time in radio. I don't know why you guys were panicking. We won't be able to talk about all our beloved
reads. I know. I can push it in there if I have to.
We've got another 4 minutes. I'm going to divvy it up 2 minutes each. So choose one out of the two that you have. Or you can describe both. It's up to you.
No, I'll choose the next one. This is The Goddess of Mtwara and Other Stories, the collection of stories that entered for the Kane Prize for African Writing in 2017. So every single year they do a book collecting the stories that they published that year, as well as for the winner. And it's amazing stories from the continent. So if you're looking for reads, African fiction, then this is your book. And I'm just going to discuss the story that won. It's the winning story by Bushra Al-Fadil from Sudan. And it's called The Story of the Girl Whose Birds Flew Away. It was written in Arabic, so he had to share that £10,000 prize with his translator. Now, the first thing that you notice about the story is how lyrical it is. It reads like poetry. It has the same kind of rhythm as slam poetry. And then the narrator is actually a poet. Now, the narrator, you don't know his name, he sees this beautiful woman and her sister in a market. And he's just so mesmerized by her, and he starts following her. But not in like a stalkery way. He sees the rhythm of her walk and how it's like music. It's just this strange, beautiful story full of metaphor and imagination. And what's special about it is that it's rooted in classical traditions of storytelling from Sudan. So it references pre-Islamic poetry, Islamic songs, and makes references to Sudanese mythology. So you're learning something about another country, and it's just absolutely marvelous, because I think we often make the mistake that we don't see literary traditions in other African countries. I think it's a mistake that we've learned from our Western traditions. We just don't look at it. We'll look at books from South Africa, but we don't look at stories from elsewhere. And it also contains stories from South Africa, Nigeria, Ethiopia, Kenya, Rwanda, and Zim. So if you're looking for writing from the continent, it's really stunning. Cool. Really, really stunning.
Cool. Now I'm
sold. And it's what's great about short stories, of course, is that you can dip in and out.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And I totally agree with you, Andrea. I find one of my biggest frustrations with the way that we read in South Africa is that it's incredibly parochial.
You've got your 2 minutes.
Mark Haywood's Get Up, Stand Up, Personal Journeys Towards Social Justice. This is very different. It's, we find out where Mark Haywood comes from in terms of the boy that he was.
Fascinating.
Who his
life
parents
story.
Were. Yes.
Yeah.
It's his life story. Mm. And you get to really get a sense of how he started to develop ideas of personal justice, of social justice. And what is really funny is that you find out that Mark was one of those young people who had these ideas about what social justice is, but then he became quite traumatized with his first experience with that in South Africa. And that's when he realized that perhaps he was a little bit naive, but he takes it on, you know, in terms of looking back on his boyhood, that was natural. And also what I share in common with Mark Haywood is that I grew up in Botswana. So that experience to compare the times that we lived in Botswana and how his activism operated and how my parents, my father's very quiet activism landed him in exile in Botswana and we were there.
Where does his accent come from? He speaks so beautifully. He sounds a bit like Andrew Feinstein in a good way if you are listening to the show, Mark.
Well, you know, he went to a private school in West Africa. If I recall correctly, it's Ghana. I started it a while ago and I'm going to start it again now.
And I want to read it over the holiday.
And he was, he went to Oxford, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So he's got that he's got that transatlantic international school accent. It's beautiful.
Just a quick question on that. He has the horrible gift of speaking brilliantly. Does he write as well as he speaks? Because I can listen to him for like 2 hours.
He tells an amazing story. He tells an amazing story, and it is not, I mean, he's very articulate as a speaker, but he speaks to you in a really accessible language, and I'm huge on accessible language, so I reckon that you should go into that.
Especially in nonfiction, it has to be accessible.
Listen, you guys have been brilliant friends of the Literature Corner. I can't wait for us to do many, many more shows in the new year. Have a wonderful break.
Same to you.